Okay.
So the first shiur that we gave was on more like a Musar Hashkafa thing. There was only two pieces of information that are going to be required from that shiur. This is the 14th question. It is absolutely required. We learned that a mitzvah of Pikuach Nefesh is incumbent upon each and every member of Kali Yisrael at any point. And therefore, and this is a throwback to my days in Yeshiva Flatbush High School, every single halacha... Anyone go to Yeshiva Flatbush? No. Every single halacha test we ever took, the required question, the last question was, what is the phone number for Hatzalah? The phone number for Hatzalah is 212-230-1000. You need to know that. That's a required question on the exam. That's the answer to the question.
So pretty much just that and then 9 other questions?
No, you'll have to do 10 other questions. This is required, but there's 2 parts to this question. So we've advanced since high school a little bit. So that's the first question. Wow, we can't write on this board today. So that's the first question. That is the phone number for Hatzalah. You need to know it. And it will be tested on every single test. So it'll be on the midterm, it'll be on the final. If you take this next time, it'll be on the midterm and the final. You need to know what is required. The second question that will be on part, this is question 14, which is required, is what bracha do you make on medications? So we talked about this, it is not well known, but you should know it. And therefore we're going to look it up. Oh, you can't see it. Oh, whatever. I'm not going to put it up now. Right? If you look, it's in Arachaim, Simon, Reish Lamed, Yehi Ratzon Lefanecha, Hashem Elokai V'Elokai Avosai. Shay Yehei, Asak.
Which Simon did you say?
Reish Lamed. Asak Zer. Lee. Lir Fu Ab. Di. Rofe. Inam Atam. That this matter should be to me as a therapy, as healing, because you are a Rofe Chinam. We talk about Rofe Chinam, you don't have to test. Rofe Chinam, you are a free healer, you are. Right here, Atzalam Fanecha, Hashem Elokai Melokai Avosai. Okay, this question is required. It has 2 parts. This is the answer to the first part. This is the answer to the second part.
From Shehei, or like
Shehei. Shehei, but just know what it is, and you tape it every time you take a medication or do a medical procedure.
So we just write Shehei on the...
Yes.
Yeah. Not the whole thing.
This is question 14. This is A. And this is B.
Everything from just being
clear. This is the answer to question A. This is the answer to question B.
You have to know all of that, or just
you have to know that. That's like say Borer Pri Ha'Eitz. You need to know this one. Okay, you need, right? You say yes or yes, or you got to know. Anytime you take medication, anytime you do a medical procedure, you should be saying this. It shows that we really are attributing all of our therapy to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This is important to me, and though it's a required question.
Even Advil?
Even Advil, yeah, absolutely. Especially when you put on a Band-Aid. So Dr. Avram writes in the Sefer Nishmas Avraham, when you put a Band-Aid on the kid, you should say this, you should teach them. The Band-Aid's not making you better, it's HaKadosh Baruch Hu making you better. We just use the Band-Aid in order to help us.
Even if you drink a lot of water with it?
Then you make a shahakal maybe also, but the Advil certainly requires a he runs some medication. So the question is when you take a you could say this before because you don't have to think immediately. The question when you take medication with water or with something, so if you're drinking more than you need just to swallow the pill, you have to make a shahakal. But this is question answer A, this is question answer B. Take a picture of it, that's fine. You know this is required, and those are the 2 answers. Any questions on that? No, straightforward. I think they're required. I think it's important. I have no problem giving you the answers. I want you to know it. Okay? It's in Reish Lamed Sif Dalad, if anyone's interested in looking it up. Okay. Fine. So, no questions, right? If you have one, that's fine. Okay.
The question is number 8.
That's question number 14 on the test. This is the answer to part A of the question. This is the answer to part B of the question. Okay. Word for word. Just spit this right back.
Reish Dalad Zivi.
Reish Lamed. 230:4. That you don't have to know. If you want to look it up, that's where it is. You can impress your friends. Okay? Any questions on question 14? The rest, I'm not going to tell you what question it is. But
can you translate that again?
That this matter, ASIC, this matter, should be to me, lirifua, as a therapy, he rofe, because rofe chinam, you are a free doctor, atak you. Praise God. Okay? Fine. The first shiur we talked about the permission, obligation to heal. We discussed that the Gemara talks about 2 things. We said the Pasuk says, Verapo yarapa mikan shenitna reshus la rofe larapos. Right? From here we learn that the doctor has a reshus, which we'll talk about in a second, to heal. We discussed whether reshus was permission or authority. And why do you need that permission or authority? We give a bunch of different answers. We said that Tosfos says, why do you need permission? Because It seems like someone got sick from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and you were therefore going against what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants. You were trying to heal that which HaKadosh Baruch Hu made sick, and who are you to do that? The Moshe Rishkein, in a different Tosfos on the Torah, they say, well, you might have thought that after one doctor tried and failed, so that's okay, but the second doctor can't come along and do it, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants this person to be sick, and he doesn't want you to succeed in treating him, and therefore the second doctor wasn't successful. So the question is, can you do it second? Can the first doctor wasn't successful? Can the second doctor come and treat this person? I say, Mikan, you're allowed to do that. Rav Kook thought that the idea was, because medicine is an empirical science, you never know if it's really going to work. So you may think that doing this, why you don't have to do this at all. Why should I even bother doing it? Because it's not even going to. It may or may not work. He says, no, you're allowed to do it because you have to try your best to treat whatever you can. The Ramban takes more of an authority approach. He says, a doctor shouldn't say, why should I bother? All I'm doing is get myself into trouble. No, the Torah encourages you to do this. If you know what to do, you can do it. And Rabbi Leif said that the point here is that you should trust doctors and not witch doctors, right? So if you have a medical, if you have a problem, you should go to a person who knows how to deal with you. That's authority, Rabbi Leif. He's Mr. Shibi here. He said you should trust medicine and not voodoo doctors and stuff like that, right? Any questions on that? If you have a question, raise your hand. Don't wait, because I'm going to go fast, because I want to go through. Yeah? The Ramban says, don't say, Ma'li Batzar Hazeh, why should I bother? Right? Maybe I'll make a mistake and I'll kill somebody and maybe it won't work anyway. So why should I bother? The Torah is giving you encouragement. You should really try to do this. And if you do the right thing, so don't worry about it.
Should be the question again.
What is Rishus? You can't say, Rishus L'Rochel L'Rapos. What is a Rishus? Is it permission or authority, and why do you need it? Okay? So we discussed that the Shulchan Aruch says that it's a mitzvah, and that that if you know how to heal someone and you do choose not to, so then you violate a prohibition. Okay? We then discussed how to relate to medicine. In that context, we discussed this bracha you make on medicine. The Chida points out that Rofa Chinam in Gematria is the Shechina. The Shechina is really the one that heals us. And
who said that?
The Chida. Chaim Yosef David Azulai, and Birkei Yosef. And Dr. Abraham points out that, just cute, that he doesn't know of any doctor who can heal without therapy, without money, without charging you, or without causing any harm or side effects, or other than a smartphone. That's what Chinam means. We then discuss that there are two sources in the Gemara to teach us that we have to do Pikuach Nefesh. Remember what they are? No, that's the mitzvah that you're allowed to violate Yisur. There's one mitzvah of Vahashevoselo from Hashavas Aveda, and a second negative prohibition of Lo Samad Al Dam Reach. Right? You cannot stand idly by while your brother's blood is being spilled. Yes?
So, can we just write, you should not stand idly by, or should we write the phrase in Hebrew?
Either way.
Okay. So then what about Barakho Yerapha?
What's the context of Barakho Yerapha? Anybody know?
Oh, that was
in there. The context is, if you damage someone, then you have to pay for his medical needs. So the Torah says, from here you learn that you're allowed to participate in medicine. You're allowed to. You have the permission of the authority. It doesn't mean that you have a positive mitzvah to do so. So, right, it's either Vahashevoselo or Lo Samad Al Dam Reach.
What's the first one in English?
Vahashevoselo, and you shall return it to him from the mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda, returning a lost object. You have to return a lost object to someone, you have to return his health to him also, in more sense. Right, and the Gemara discusses why you need both. You can go through the Gemara, right? We would have thought that if you only had one, if you only had Vashevoselo, you wouldn't know that you have to go and spend money. Right? You would have thought, if I can do it, so then I can do it. But I don't have to go out and get other people to spend money to do it. Remember, we went through that Gemara inside. So Lo Samad Al Dam Reach teaches you, no. You even have to go that extra step. And if you can't do it yourself, go find someone who can.
What if I only had Lo Tam?
If you only had Lo Samad, you would have thought it was a negative prohibition. There's no mitzvah to do it.
And also, what did you say was the difference between Yerapah Yerapah versus these two?
Rabbi Rapa teaches you that I have rishus, I have a permission or authority to do so. There's no mitzvah or prohibition. It means I'm allowed to. Allowed permission or authority, but I don't have a mitzvah necessarily to do so. So we discussed, so if you focus too heavily on one of them, right? So what happens now that we have both of these sources, Vashevoselo and Lo Samad Al Dam Reach? Right? So Shlomo Kluger says, well, there are certain exceptions to Hashavas Aveda. There are certain times where you don't have to return a lost object, such as Zakein Ve'eino Lefi Kvodo. Right? If you're an elderly person and it's not according to fitting your honor, Zakein Ve'eino Lefi Kvodo. And then the second one is, I will just write it down here, Aveda Das. So So Zaken Benil Dikvodo is an elderly person, is not befitting his honor to return that object. It's a dirty something, a dirty donkey. He doesn't have to schlep it through the marketplace to go give it back to you. He's exempt. So too, Rav Shlomo Kluger writes, you're exempt from performing the mitzvah of Pikuach Nefesh if it's degrading to you in some way. The Minchas Chinuch also points out, and I think Rav Shlomo Kluger says this also, Aveda Midas. If I throw something out, then you have no mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda to give it back to me. So he says, so too, if you try to commit suicide, I have no mitzvah to save you.
Who says that?
The Minchas Chinuch. I think it's Rav Shlomo Kluger also. Yeah?
What was the first thing about being exempt from saving someone's life?
So these are both exemptions to the mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda. Zaken Benil Dikvodo, if you lose some dirty, disgusting garment, you don't have to get the big rebbe to come and the rebbe finds it. It's not befitting him to carry it in public to give it to you, so he doesn't have to return it to you. So Rav Shlomo Kluger says so. So too, if saving your life would require me in my silk bekesha and strimel to go jump into the water, and I'm the rebbe to go jump into the water to save you, I would be exempt. Because it's not befitting my honor. Whatever it is, whatever the case would be. So we do not paskin this way. We don't paskin this way.
For both?
Neither. Why? So why don't we paskin this way? So we don't paskin this way. So Moshe Feinstein disagrees with both. He's even shocked that these could even be said. He doesn't believe Rav Shlomo Kluger even meant it. Okay? And he says, why? He says, well, Zaken Benil Dikvodo means that that it's not befitting my honor to do it. So the issue is that, well, it's not, I wouldn't do it even for myself. Right? That even if it was my donkey, I wouldn't carry it to the marketplace. Or if it was I had to jump into the river to save myself, I wouldn't do it. He says, but you have to do it to yourself. You have to save yourself. That's the mitzvah. You have no exemption to save someone else. Vashevosalo is referring to someone else, return someone else's object. To yourself, you have to do it. So of course you have to do it then to someone else. This is not the real exemption. Meaning, once you have lo samar ol dam rayafa, it complements every hole you would have from Vashevosalo, any exemption you would have from Vashevosalo, lo samar ol dam rayafa fills. Right? So he says the fact that you wouldn't be exempt when you did it yourself, you're not exempt what to do it to a friend. Rav Moshe says the same thing by Aveda Midas. He says it can't be that if somebody did it, that you're allowed to throw out objects. I'm allowed to throw out things, and therefore you have no mitzvah to return it to me. I'm not allowed to kill myself. I'm not allowed to throw out my own body, and therefore that doesn't exempt you from returning it to me. The fact that I violated prohibition in doing that doesn't make it then okay. So that's how he disagrees with both. So we talked about whether this has to do with, there are two ways to look at it. Remember, Tosfos says, so why do you need Rishus? You need Rishus because it looks like you're Soser the Gzeiras HaMelech. It looks like you're going against that which HaKadosh Baruch Hu said. Right? So the question is, yes, it does look like you're going against what HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, but it's okay anyway. Or, that no. Now it's not. There is no, we are actually following the mitzvah of what Hashem wanted. So, you could suggest that that's how much we relate to Hashavas Aveda, right? Shlomo Kluger and Michal Skinov saying, well, if everything focuses on Hashavas Aveda, so there are certain exemptions. So he says, the more you compare the two, you say, no, there's no serious Xeris Melech. There's a mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda. When it doesn't apply, it doesn't apply. Right? There's no, the Kadosh Baruch Hu told you to do it under certain circumstances, and you do it under certain circumstances, and when he said don't do it, you don't have to. And maybe, according to that, so there's no serious Xeris Melech. But if they're different, so maybe there's more to say that there's not a serious Xeris Melech, that's not very clear, but don't worry about that. Trust me. Okay.
Just now, Moshe Kluger, Moshe Feinstein.
I didn't say that.
No, just the last
one. So, based on the same idea, there is an idea in the Rishonim that the Ibn Ezra says it, or Ibn Bechaya says it, that you only apply, that the mitzvah of Pikuach Nefesh only applies to things that are external, not to diseases that are internal. Right? Because only that which is inside they believe to be more of a, from HaKadosh Baruch Hu's hand, and that which is outside, meaning a trauma or something happened because you were lazy or someone hurt you, that's what we're allowed to fix. You're only allowed to fix that which is outside, not that which is inside. The crazy place, he says, because you can't really see it, so you don't really know what's going on. Right? So the difference might be nowadays, so maybe we can see it. We have radiology, so you can see it. So the crazy place, you might say, okay. So today it's a little bit different. You have to imagine back in the day, they were sort of guessing. Yes?
Did you say that external or
yeah, so that's what Rabbi Bechai and Ibn Ezra says. The mitzvah of the Pikuach Nefesh only applies to external matters. Again, we don't paskin that way. Was that clear? We don't follow that. Yeah.
The Aveda Midat was a suicide.
Yeah, it's like it's like throwing my own stuff out. We don't paskin like Rav Shlomo Kluger and the Michal Skinov. Let's be very clear. We don't do that. Even if it's degrading, and even if it's suicide, we try to save people. So maybe this is what the... So the same idea might go back. So is there a Stiras Gzera the Melech? Are we going against what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted, but it's okay? Or there's... Or no, it's permissible. Maybe that's a discussion about whether you can heal those things which are going... Those internal maladies. So Rebbe Bechai says, no. Only external things you can heal, because when you're healing the stuff that's inside, then you that's really for this Baruch Hu's realm. You have no place to do that. Even outside, it's a Stira the Gzera Melech, but it's okay. But... That which happens inside, that's too much of a steering Xeris Melech. And other Rishonim, everyone else who disagrees, says no. There is no, once HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives you a mitzvah of Pikuach Nefesh, it's not only, you're not going against his will by fulfilling that mitzvah. His will is that you should fulfill that mitzvah. Rabbeinu Bechai and Ibn Ezra say the external versus the internal. And I'm now suggesting that it goes into that, it's not really me, it's Rabbi Zev Wiener, it was his shir that I'm quoting from. Don't worry about that. He suggested that this question in Kosher, is it still steer? Are you going against what Hashem wanted, but it's okay? Or, no, am I not going against what Hashem wanted? This is exactly what Hashem wants. Hashem wants a mitzvah of pikuach nefesh. Maybe that relates to the Machlokas Rishonim, the Rabbeinu Bechai and Ibn Ezra who say only external, but not internal, versus everybody else on the planet who says, no, it doesn't matter where you're sick. However you're sick, the mitzvah is to treat you, because there is no steer exeris melech. The mitzvah is pikuach nefesh, and that's okay. Rabbeinu Bechai might be saying, no, really is it? You're going against Hashem, what Hashem wanted. But when it's an external thing and it looks like it caused by someone else, then it's okay. When it's completely internal, it's not because Baruch Hu's realm, that's too much. Okay? Fine. And then we talked about the... Any questions on that? That's the mitzvah to save life. We then talked about the Gemara in Yom HaPehemot Aleph. How do you know that you can violate a prohibition to save a life? The Gemara wants to know, how do you know you can violate Shabbos to save a life? The Gemara goes through several different options. What are the last two that are relevant for us? V'chaibahem, just you need to know. V'chaibahem, Torah says these are the mitzvahs that you should do and live by them. This is how we conclude. V'chaibahem teaches you that you can violate any mitzvah. Right? The previous limit in the Gemara might also be relevant. The Gemara goes through about five or six different options, right? Right, it says chalel alav. Shabbat Achad. This board is really bad. Sorry. If you can't see, tell me. Kadesh Yishmor. Shabbatot Tarbe.
Can we write that in Kosher?
Yes. You write it in Kosher. But Chaybah is two words. So it's
simple.
Chalel Olav Shabbat Achad. Kadesh Yishmor. Shabbatot Tarbe. Violate upon him one Shabbos so that he can keep many Shabboses. So the Gemara says, well, that's true only if I know what I'm doing is Vadai. Right? It's what I'm going to do is certainly going to save him, or he's certainly going to die, so that I can do it, because you're doing an accounting. How many Shabboses am I going to gain? So if I can certainly gain the Shabbos, then it's okay. If I'm not going to gain the Shabbos for sure, then I can't violate the prohibition. Prohibition is standing in my way. It's like a negative thing. If I'm going to gain, so it's okay. V'chaibahem means no. Go after it at each moment. You have to live by them. And so everything, even makom safek, even when I don't know if it's going to succeed, two savekos, very important. If I don't know if the therapy is going to succeed, or if I don't even know if he's going to die, in either case, it's permissible. Chalel Alav says, but only when it's Chalel Alav is only when it's vaday, when it's safek, I don't know. Which is why the Gemara then says, oh, so v'chaibahem teaches everything. So now, what do you do once you have both? Once you have Chalel Alav and once you have v'chaibahem, do you still need the previous limudim in the Gemara? So the Nitziv says yes. You still need the previous limudim in the Gemara, because sometimes one will be applicable and one will not. So v'ani nafkamina. So we talked about seven. The first nafkamina is from the Tziv. He says, what about for a fetus? He says, can you save the life of a fetus? He says, a fetus is not alive, so it's not v'chaibahem. But it has potential life, so he says, it's chalel alav shabbat achad. Right, that's talking about when if you save the fetus, you will potentially be able to keep many more Shabboses. So that's fine, he says, but chalel alav is only applicable when he's vaday, when he's certainly going to die, or it's certainly going to succeed. So according to the Nitziv, only when it's vaday can you do it. Right? Only when it's certainly, right, because it falls into chalel alav, not into v'chaibahem. The Ramban says even not. He says even when it's only a suffering.
Ramban or
Ban? The Ramban, Nachmanides. And we pass in that way, the Shulchan Aruch points out, you can eat on Yom Kippur even if there's only a suffix. He says, we see that we pass in this way because a woman's allowed to eat on Yom Kippur even if there's only a suffix. If something may happen to the child, she can eat on Yom Kippur. So you see that we pass in here, so how does that work? Because the Nitziv's right, there's no v'chaibahem. Right? There's no v'chaibahem. So Chalel loves only Vaday. So I can eat on Yom Kippur. So the Lubavitch Rebbe, the left Lubavitch Rebbe, by the article, he says, no. You see, once that we have the Chai Bahem, and we have all of these together, it's the same as the Chakir before. Once you have Hashevosel and Lo Samod, they each fill in each other's holes. So once you have V'chai Bahem and Chalel Lav, they each fill in each other's holes. So yes, he falls into the category of Chalel Lav, but not V'chai Bahem. But once you fall into the idea, the categories at all, they all supplement each other, and you can do it even Mishum Safek. Yes. So we pass in Halach L'mayis, so you can violate Shabbos and eat Yom Kippur for the Safek of the fetus.
So the last thing you just said, they both fill in each other.
Not like Lubavitcher Rebbe. Lubavitcher Rebbe points out that's how we pass it.
Okay, and then it's how did the fetus work
with
only one of them?
He says the fetus isn't v'chayim, he's not alive. So you can't say, you can't violate the mitzvah to v'chayim, so you should live by them. But chalal alav is a potential in the future, so it's okay. The second one, he says to resurrect a dead person, I'm not going to go through the Tosfos now about Eliyahu Navi, but to resurrect a dead person, he says that cannot be v'chayim because he is dead, but it could be chalal alav shama alachah, right? Because he will potentially keep more Shabbases. There's a Tosfos about Metzia, which we'll just mention briefly. Eliyahu Hanavi was Mechayev Meis, and he's a Kohen. How could he go into the room to Mechayev Meis? We'll talk about this after the test again. How could he do this? It's Borolo Sheikhayev. He knew it would work. Why do you have to know it would work? Why you knew it would work? Mechayev Meim, something, it's Mutter. Because he was dead. So there's no Mechayev Meim. Then it points out, Plechemta says the same thing. He says it wasn't Mutter Mishim Mechayev Meim. It was only Mutter Mishim Chalel Lav, and therefore it had to be Vaday and not something. The Shulchan Aruch talks about a case, can you rescue a child that is where there's no risk to his life, who was kidnapped for the purpose of converting to Christianity? This happened back in the day in the Crusades. You are certain there is no risk to life. Let's say you could be certain there is no risk to life. Practically, not so much. You probably never know. But if there is no risk to life, so can you violate Shabbos to go and rescue this child? So Rabbi Sachs pointed out in the Shir, he thought that maybe you can't say b'chayim because his life's not a risk, right? His life's not a risk. Let's say you know his life's not a risk. He says, but it's still chalel alav shabbat achad. Kadesh yishim Shabbos osar. But if you don't save him, he's never going to keep Shabbos again. He's going to be grown. He's going to be raised in some monastery. So make mishum chalel alav, it should be okay. So the question then is, okay, so once it's okay mishum chalel alav, is it only vadeh mishum safek? So it'll be machlokas and then sif and lubavitcher rebbe, right? Once you fit, lubavitcher rebbe pointed out that we paskim that once you fit into any of them, everything is mutter, and then sif seemed to think otherwise.
So you would?
You would. We would. Halacha l'maaseh, we would. Don't worry about that. Somebody will not make it until next Shabbos. Let's say a person, he's going to die in moments. He has another hour to live or so. So can I violate Shabbos for him? So you might say, well, we should b'chai by him, yes. We should chalel alav, no. Because he might not live until next Shabbos. So how can I violate one Shabbos to keep another Shabbos? Practically, so that's the opposite, right? If we only had chalel alav, but we didn't have b'chai by him, practically, a doctor has no right to have any halachic say in how long you have to live. Only Kodesh Baruch Hu has how long you have to live. You can't say you're not going to live till next Shabbos. You never know. So practically, that's only a theoretical point. The same Rosh Shlomo Kluger says if a person will become blind in both eyes, and let's say there is no pikuach nefesh involved, right? He will live a long, healthy life. He will become blind in both eyes. So he says you can't say v'chai b'hem, right? Let's say you have to violate a d'oraisa. You can't say v'chai b'hem. You have to violate Shabbos, right? Even though it's Sakanas Aver, maybe, you can't violate Shabbos for Sakanas Aver, remember? Even though it's a risk to life, you can't violate Shabbos. You can violate a regular law, you can't violate Shabbos. A person will become blind. He says, not v'chai b'hem, he's going to live. But maybe we should chalel alav. Why? Because a blind person is exempt from mitzvos. So if a blind person, especially blind in both eyes, is exempt from mitzvos, when he keeps Shabbos, when he makes kiddush from now on, he's going to do it as ke'enu mitzuvah v'osa, right? There's gadol ha-mitzuvah v'osa, mish'enu mitzuvah v'osa. Greater is one who is commanded in the commandment and does it than one who is not commanded and volunteers for it, right? Interesting. When you're commanded to do it, you're greater than the one who volunteers. Because you're doing it because HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants you to do it. So that's a greater standing. So he says, when this person makes kiddush from now on, he's not fulfilling the mitzvah as well as he could have been. Because before he was commanded, now he's no longer. Now he's exempt. So he says, maybe chalel alav should apply to this guy. We can maybe violate Shabbos only mishum chalel alav to restore his sight to him so that he can keep Shabbos optimally from now on. Okay, any questions on that? Yes. I know, I skipped two. One was a repeat of the Tosfos about Metzia, one was a Ger Shemal Velo Tavol, don't worry about it. Normally, if I say five, if we have five nafaminas, the test will say two, three, or four. You want to say all of them. What do we talk about next? Bikur Cholim and Tefillah was the next series of shiurim. So we talk about this mitzvah to visit sick people. And the question is that midaraisa or midrabanan, machlokas rishonim? What mitzvah midaraisa or midrabanan would it fit in? Is it a separate mitzvah or is it milas chesed or something else? And how does that, what if it's a daraisa, it has to fit into something. People call it might not be its own mitzvah, so it couldn't probably into milas chesed. So what are the goals of Bikur Cholim, if you remember?
Wait, so it's Gemilas Chassadim?
Yeah. If it's Daraisa, we have to fit into the category of Chesed or Gemilas Chassadim. Right, what are you trying to accomplish? So first of all, the Gesser Chaim pointed out says you shouldn't drive the person crazy. That's a practical point. When you go there, you're not supposed to like go to the doctor and start giving advice, unless you know what you're talking about. Many people go and they try to tell them, you know, I heard of this doctor and this treatment, that's not really helpful. The patient's sitting there in a hospital bed, don't start telling him that you had a better doctor somewhere else. Don't drive them crazy. You're supposed to be there to comfort them, to take care of his needs, and to daven for them, right? You have to do all three. So the question is, what about when this doesn't apply? What about when the person is a baby, the person is unconscious, and you can't comfort them? You can still daven for them, and you can still take care of their needs. Right? The Gemara assumes that seeing the person there and davening for them is much greater than not seeing them there and davening for them. We'll talk about davening in a couple of minutes.
What was the second one? The second thing you have to do?
Taking care of his needs.
There were three things.
Taking care of needs, comfort, and tefillah.
We also said helping them do a mitzvah.
Helping them perform mitzvahs, but you should help everyone perform mitzvahs. Right. So you can help someone perform mitzvahs also, but that will not necessarily qualify as a major need. So, what are the nafkamim and pimis? Can you send a shliach? Can you do bikur cholim via someone else? Look, the person needs a pillow, and I can send someone to get a pillow for him, right? So, do I fulfill the mitzvah of bikur cholim through a shliach? And the problem is that the shliach is also has to do a mitzvah of bikur cholim, and it's a mitzvah shebegufo, right? I can't have a shliach put on tefillin for me. I can't have a shliach shake a lulav for me, right? The famous mitzvahs. You can't have a shliach, a messenger, do something that you have to do with your own body, an action that you have to perform. If the mitzvah is to perform the mitzvah of bikur cholim, I can't do it al yedei shliach. If the mitzvah is to just take care of his needs, so then I could send someone to take care of his needs, like the nursing staff. Maybe the nursing staff should qualify as shlichim because they're taking care of the patient's needs. Now, they're actually doing it a lot better than we can, so they should be allowed to do it. We don't have to go and interfere with them. That's just a practical consideration. But can you fulfill the mitzvah al yedei shliach? It's likely that not. Can you fulfill the mitzvah via telephone? So, Rav Moshe Feinstein talks about this, Rav Avadya talks about this, Tzitzel Eliezer talks about this. Tzitzel Eliezer says there are a lot of multiple components of bikur cholim, and you can fulfill some of them via telephone. And Rav Avadya says, you know, you can give him comfort, but when you don't see him, you can daven for him also. I don't even need to go to him to daven for him. So why do you do bikur cholim? Because when you go, the tefillah is different. He says that you don't get on the telephone, you can't take care of his needs on the telephone. So he says, really, 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 you should really try to get there. Don't think you're fulfilling the mitzvah, you're being yotzei by talking to him on the phone. He says, look, if the person's in Australia, and I just can't take care of him, or, you know, I'm home taking care of my kids, and I can't just leave them and go to the back of the chola, so then you should call him on the phone. You do something. But don't think that it substitutes. Rav Moshe says clearly that, like, the tefillah there is better, and you won't get the same impression if you're not there.
What was the first one?
The Tzitzel Eliezer says, maybe you can fulfill some of them. Rav Avadya says, don't think that you can do everything. Rav Moshe just points out that the tefillah is better, and you don't get the same impression. So what about the tefillah? So Rav Moshe also points out that each person's tefillah is different. And like a Baruch Hu listens to each person's tefillah differently. And so the fact that I sent someone to go do that doesn't mean that his tefillah is going to be as good as my tefillah. And maybe my tefillah will be more meaningful. So don't think that you can fulfill the mitzvah necessarily by having someone else daven for this patient. You need to daven for them also. So several aspects of how you daven for a chola. 1, 2, 3, 4 details of how you daven for a chola. The first is tefillas rabim. You're supposed to include this chola within all of the chola ami and hamam Yisrael. You're supposed to daven for this chola, betoch shar chola Yisrael, because of the schus of the rabim, the merit of the rabim should help each person. And even though this person might be a great and holy person, the fact that we're davening for everybody, the tzibur of itself has a certain koach to it, a certain power to, but the Rebbe Shalom should listen to us, and the tefillah, the Rat Shach says our tefillah is heard more. Just a psychological point, especially when you're in front of the patient, it helps the chola feel a little bit better. I'm not the only one sick, I'm not the only one dying here. There's a lot of people here, there's a support group, I'm part of a group, and everyone who's davening for every chole around the world is also davening for me. It's a very strengthening point, I think it's important. The second aspect of tefillah is that we pass on that the Shechina is found by the bed of a sick patient, and therefore the tefillah is heard more easily. And the halacha l'maaseh nafkamina is how you're supposed to behave when you're there, when you're by a chola, when you're by a sick patient, the Shechina is there, and if we have to behave in a certain way, you're not supposed to sit on his bed, you're not supposed to sit by his head, you're supposed to act respectfully. So to the Bezdin, the Shechina is found in the Bezdin, and therefore you have to sit respectfully. That's why the Dayanim come in and dress appropriately. When you go to Bezdin, you have to be dressed appropriately. You don't feel it as acutely by the chola, but you still have to be more serious about it. Yes?
So what was the halacha concerning the Shechina?
The halacha is that, A, your tefillah is heard more.
It's just
that's why your tefillah is better. Being there.
It's not really a halacha what you should do.
No, that's not. But it's why your tefillah is better. And the second one is the Gemara in Dara Memoral says, HaNichnas L'Vakar HaKin Chola, when you come to visit a patient, Lo Yishem Al Gamei Amiki. You're not supposed to sit on his bed. V'lo Al Gamei Kisa. You're supposed to sit in his Ate for the Talmas. You know, do that. V'yoshem Al Gamei Karka. You're supposed to sit on the floor. We make sure Shechina is free. The Malam Mimitasa. We assume the Shechina is found by the head of the bed. So you're not supposed to sit by the head of the bed. That's practically what we don't do today. You don't sit by the head of the bed because the Shechina is there. Now, if you're fulfilling some purpose in helping the patient do that, so then you certainly can because you're helping the patient. We're talking about just casual sitting and being with the chola. If they tell you that's where you should be sitting, then that's where you should be sitting. We're talking about just casual sitting where you're not accomplishing anything else. Okay. That's the second aspect. The third detail is the name of the patient. When you're davening by a chola, you do not need to use his name. When you're davening not by the chola, you do need to use his name. The Chazon Sofer therefore writes that davening, quoting the Mikubalim, that when you mention the patient's, the person's name, and min hashamayim, there's some gzeira against him, that's bad. Alpi Kabbalah is bad if there's some negative thing associated with this patient's name, and therefore it's better to daven by the chola because you don't have to mention his name. But the halacha l'maaseh nafkamina is, do you mention his name or not? The last thing is language. The Shulchan Aruch writes, when you are visiting a chola, when you're standing with him, you can use any language you want. When you are not with the chola, you should ideally use Hebrew or Lashon Kodesh. The Gemara in Shabbos says, that's why, because the Malachi Asharis only do not understand Aramaic. Right? So you always have to daven in Hebrew. Why do you have to daven in Hebrew? Because the Malachim don't understand Aramaic. So they need to help us get our tefillos on HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So when you're davening Betzibur, when you're davening with a minion, so then we can daven in any language you want. When you say Shemona Esrei Betzibur, you can say any language you want, because when you're davening Betzibur, you don't need any Malachim. So the Gemara says, why in front of a patient can you use any language you want? Because the Shechina is there. You don't need any Malachim, the Shechina is there. It doesn't have to be the Shechina being there. You can use any language you want. So what is the Malachim in language? We talked about this a little bit. So what does it mean? They don't speak Aramaic. The Rif says they only understand Hebrew. The Rosh says they only can understand Aramaic. The Taz says we want to be inclusive as possible, right? The Rif says they only understand Lashon Kodesh. So when you're not with a patient, you have to use Hebrew. And the Rosh says they only don't understand Aramaic. So you can use any language you want.
Should we be familiar with like the specific, who says it?
No. They all lived after Shulchan Aruch. That's what I said. The Taz says, he says, look, one says like this, one says like this. The person's sick. Let's try to do everything. We'll dive in Hebrew when we can, when we're not with the patient. So just to make sure we yotzei everybody, we want this person to get better. Okay, any questions on the type of tefillah by a chola? This is fiery.
Sorry,
what do you dive in when you're by the chola?
What?
What do you dive in? What is the text, the context to you dive in? You should get better. What if the person is not getting better? May you dive in that he die. So we're certainly not allowed to do anything to kill a patient. Never, ever, ever, ever you are not allowed to do anything to kill a patient. If someone were to ask you on a midterm, can you ever take an action to hasten a patient's death, the answer is no.
Tefillah is an action.
And so the question is, tefillah is not an action, right? Tefillah is davening. So the Ron Nedarim, famous Ron in Nedarim, you may want to know his name, the Ron Nedarim, again, I won't take points off if you don't know it. You should know the story, though, he's in the Nedarim. Nedarim is a Gemara. The Gemara talks about Rabbi Yehuda Hanas, he was very sick, right? The story is important. He was very sick, and the base medrash was davening that he should live. And they knew he was going to die soon, and they were davening he should live, davening he should live. And his maidservant said, you know, Elyonim mevakshim et Rebbe, the Shamayim wants Rebbe, and the people on the ground want Rebbe. Let the people on the ground win out. We want to have Rebbe with us. And then she saw how much he was suffering, and she changed her mind. And she said, that the heaven should win out over the earthly people, that Rebbe should die. Right? Effectively, he should die. And the base measure keeps davening and davening and davening, and he's not dying. So she takes some big jug from the roof, throws it to the ground, and it shatters. It makes a lot of noise. The Beis Medrash stops davening for a minute. They want to know what happened, and Rebbe dies that instant. So the Ron learns from here, you are allowed to daven for someone to die. Right? So there,
That was an action. That was an action.
But she didn't actually kill him. So A, it's an action, but she didn't kill him.
Okay.
But he proves the fact that she davened, he wants to just prove she davened, he should die.
Yeah.
She davened, he should die. You can also daven, he should die. Right? And he says that if you don't, the Gemara in the Darim, that's the Gemara in Ksubis. The Gemara in Ksubis is talking about the story. The Gemara in the Darim is talking about the Mitzvah of Bikur Chol, and says if you don't mevaker the Choli, as if you killed him. So the Gemara's like, what do you mean? He says, no. If you don't mevaker the Choli, you don't daven, eino mispala, lo sheyichla, lo sheyichya, ve lo sheyomus. You don't daven for him, not that he should live, and not that he should die. So what does that mean? So the pasuk pshat is, you don't daven for him at all, and maybe he'll die, maybe he'll live, it has nothing to do with you. You should daven for him, because this way he'll live. The Ron says, no. Sometimes you daven for life, and sometimes you daven for death, and you see the Amta, the Rebbe daven for death, and that's okay. Do we paskin like this Ron? So the Aruch HaSulchan quotes this Ron, the Pharisee Israel quotes this Ron, and the Rav Masah says, you see, people quote this Ron, we paskin like this Ron. The Shulchan Aruch does not quote this Ron. And the Tzitzel Yezer says, you know why the Shulchan Aruch doesn't quote this Ron? He knew the Ron, we don't paskin like this Ron. And the Aruch HaSulchan lived in the early 1900s, the Pharisee Israel lived a little before that. You don't see anybody quoting this Ron because we don't possibly like this Ron. It's a Ron in the Darm. It's on the page in the Darm. In the Darm, right? It's actually printed in the Vilna Shas.
So the Shulchan Aruch doesn't pass by him, so we don't.
He doesn't quote it. He doesn't say we don't, but he doesn't quote it. So the Tzitzel Yezer points out, not only is it not quoted by Shulchan Aruch, it seems incompatible with the obligation of the Gemara. You have to save everybody. What gives you a right to daven that he should die? Right? It's similar to an action. You're right, it might not be an action, but it seems it's not in the spirit of the law. And three, he points out, why not follow the Beis Medrash? The whole Beis Medrash, Davini should die. He should live. And his maidservant, Davini should die, so we should pass on like the maidservant over the Beis Medrash. We should pass on like the Beis Medrash. So, according to the second approach, Rabbi Blyth just points out that is it incompatible with the principle of Piguach Nefesh or not? Says, it's not in the spirit of the law of Piguach Nefesh. You're trying to save people. You shouldn't daven, they should die. You shouldn't do anything, they should die. You shouldn't daven, they should die. So Rabbi Blyach says, no, what's the mitzvah of Piguach Nefesh? It's that you should safeguard your body. Right? You have a mitzvah of a shomer. You're supposed to safeguard your body. So if someone gives me something to watch, a cow to watch, and I agree to watch the cow, and it's driving me nuts, so I'm going to have to do all the actions I have to do to protect the cow, I can still daven that because Baruch will make the guy come back faster to take it from me, as long as I'm doing the right actions. Rabbi Blyach doesn't think it's incompatible. Tzitzel Yezer does think it's incompatible. Yes?
Not davening for his death, but really that his suffering be ended, so then you'll be okay.
So that's what some people want to say. But effectively, she davened she yechufa lianus mitachachon, that he should die.
Yeah, but in order to end suffering.
So you can also just daven that his suffering should end. I mean,
in vain, you know.
You're right. So the question is, what do you do in that case? Do you say, well, if it's rough, he can do whatever he wants, so just end his suffering, I don't care how you do it. He writes on that he should live without suffering. She would have said that too, but she didn't. Right? She said yechufa that the heaven should win. She could have said no, cure him and give him back to us, but she didn't. So even if you think you can do this, who should do it? So the Shulchan Aruch says no one related or associated with this person can daven for them to die because we're afraid that they have some negiyas, that they have some vested interest, you never know. So if you have any relationship to this patient at all, you should not daven, you should die. And the Tzitzel Yezer says, well, even according to the Ron, only in very, very, very limited situations, and only when it's completely l'shem shamayim, and Amta the Rebbe, yes, he wants to pass on like the Beis Medrash over the Rebbe's maidservant, but we know we learned halacha from Rebbe's maidservant. She was a very firm lady, a very holy lady, only her, because only she had such kavanos.
So according to the Ron,
you
can only do this?
This is who's arguing with the Ron, because he wants to limit the Ron. So he's saying the Ron, Amta the Rebbe, yes, nobody else. Rav Moshe Feinstein says also, yeah, I guess, maybe, but only for Yechidei Skula, only very holy people can do this, and I don't know who they are, and clearly he didn't think it was one of them. This is Rav Moshe Feinstein saying the same idea. He's like, yes, we pass on like this Ron, but it's only for appropriate Yechidei Skula, very holy people, who he himself thought he wasn't one of them. He goes, I don't know who they are, so don't think you can do this. But they can do this, and they probably knew that already, so they didn't even tell him. But, fine.
Bottom line is no.
So even if you say yes, so we'll see in a minute. So even if you say yes, it's A, limited to who you can do it, and Ramos of Feinstein, I think Ramos and the Tzitzel Yezer try to say, well, nobody. The Chikelev says nobody related, and Ramos of Feinstein and Tzitzel Yezer say, well, not really anybody alive today. And The Shukinyan Torah Halacha points out, well, it was only okay for Rebbe, because Rebbe was such a holy person, it didn't matter if he was alive or dead, because he was so holy, so his neshama was something. So that doesn't really apply. So not only can you limit who's allowed to pray, who you're allowed to pray for. So the Shukinyan Torah Halacha says, yes, it applies, but only to people like Rebbe who don't exist anymore, and so we don't have to.
It's not really Rebbe, it's more Zvezda.
No, she could, no, but the Shukinyan Torah Halacha, you could only do that for Rebbe, because his neshama, it didn't matter where his neshama was. This is a different approach. Not who can pray, who can you pray for? So we've limited this excessively. We said no one related, and since Leah and Rav Moshe say, well, no one alive, and the Shukinyan Torah Halacha says for no one who's alive today. So you're going to find posts who can say this, it's a little limited. So Rav Avadia passes that it's permissible, but he says, well, what should you daven? He says, well, you should daven Shigel or Fush Leim. That he should be cured. Vim friendings are exera, and if Minas Shamayim was already decided that that he won't make it, so he shouldn't suffer. Rav Avadia Yosef. That's him daven. That's when he says you're allowed to daven, you should die. That's what he said you should do. You should say you should have refuah shleima. And if it was already the Shamayim, there's exera that he won't get any better, then you shouldn't suffer. That's his version of davening that you can die, to for someone to die. So even though he thinks it's permissible, it seems to be what everyone would have said otherwise. So practically, it doesn't really help us. There is a tikkun in Lashon Chachamim from Ben Ishchai. Rabbi quotes that he said, Rabbi Yaakov Sasson's grandson says in the yeshiva that they did this, it was very strange and very strange, very odd feeling. The Ben Ishchai says that someone who seems to be dying, not really dying, you can go to the patient's bed and say, Prakam of Tehillim, it's in Lashon Chachamim, Tehillim Beis, and Simon Mem Hay, and the Ben Ishchai says that they did that once. His Rebbe did it, and he brought a minion of people, and they were davening. You don't daven that you should die. You just read Prakim from Bracious and Tillim and whatnot. And as they left, the person finally died. And so the grandson told me that Rav Avadia once did this in yeshiva. They got together 10 guys. They went to this patient's home, who has been lying in bed, virtually comatose for a year, and nothing was helping, nothing was hurting. They went in and said his Prakim, and before they left the house, the person died, and everyone in yeshiva was really scared. Okay, but even according to Rav Avadia, he says we pass on like the run. He says, yeah, person should have refuah shleima, and if not, so they shouldn't suffer. Okay, any questions on that? Okay, we'll try to go a little bit quicker.
What about sorry?
Yes.
If this, you know, if he says he should be without suffering, what if that doesn't work? Then would the next step be?
I don't know. He doesn't say that. Meaning, when you're dabbling, you should die. That's the limit of what you're supposed to say. Okay, the next thing we talk about is anatomy lab and autopsies introduction to the mitzvah of pikuach nefesh. We're going to go through this a little bit quickly because we spent more time on this. There's a prohibition of nivul ameis, you're not allowed to desecrate the body. There's a prohibition of hanam and ameis, you cannot derive benefit from a dead body. So the nivul ameis, the prohibition to desecrate a dead body, we also assume it's a mitzvah, it's a prohibition, midoraisa from the Torah, based on the pasuk of solin nivlaso. You should not allow a hanging victim to lie in the gallows overnight. That's called desecrating the body, and anything more than anything that's desecrating is prohibited. To whom does it apply? Almost all Rishonim assume it is limited to Jews. Maybe it's related to the mitzvah of the chiv kvur, the mitzvah to bury somebody, which only applies to Jews, so maybe desecrating the body, because that's where we learn it from. You can't leave the hanging victim on the gallows overnight, you should bury him, so maybe with the prohibition, but only when the mitzvah applies, the prohibition applies, it only applies to Jews. The Shulchan Aruch quotes a tshuva of the Rashba, who says it applies to non-Jews as well. Shulchan Aruch says non-Jews as well. The Grub, the Vilna Gaon points out that the Rashba himself in three other places says otherwise. So it's a little bit strange that the Shulchan Aruch quoted the Tshuva as a Rashba. So what do we do? Well, practically, the Shulchan Aruch says it applies to non-Jews and everybody else pretty much says it doesn't. So the Chidah says, I'm stuck. Shulchan Aruch said it, what are you going to do? The Pisei Tshuva already says that, yes, it applies to non-Jews, but for non-Jews it's only an Issa D'Rabbanan. So what's the difference between being an Issa D'Rabbanan or not? Rav Moshe Feinstein and Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach say, if they're doing it for a purpose, then it is permissible. So for the sake of studying medicine, for the sake of learning, for the sake of producing some productive result, it is permissible to violate that Issa D'Rabbanan by a non-Jew.
That's more fancy.
Rav Moshe Feinstein and Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. Two other prohibitions of nivul hameis. Nivul hameis means to desecrate the body. We said you learn it from Los Baal Talin, don't leave the body overnight. The Gemara in Bava Kama says that there are 10 details that apply to Yerushalayim. One is that you cannot leave a body overnight in Yerushalayim. Right? Rashi says we don't know why. So what do you mean you can't leave a body overnight in Yerushalayim? You can't leave a body overnight anywhere. It's prohibited. You have to bury people. So we say, well, we do it all the time. So why do we do it all the time? Mishum kavodo, for the kavod of the mace. If we think that delaying the funeral for some reason will increase the honor of the mace, meaning more people will come, the children will come, or something like that, it's permissible. The Radvaz says in Yerushalayim, you're not allowed to do that. The Ramban says there's a separate prohibition in the land of Israel. Velo titamei ha'aretz, you cannot defile the land. That's a separate prohibition. You cannot leave any corpses out in the land, even a non-Jewish corpse, who you have no mitzvah to bury, and if there is an issur of desecration of nivel ha'mes, it's only the Rabbanan. He says, in the land of Israel, it's prohibited to leave anybody's out for any period of time. And so, according to the Ramban, any anatomy dissection would be prohibited in Israel based on the fact that it's out overnight, even for its own.
Bava Kamal only mentions Yerushalayim?
Yeah.
Okay.
The Ramban is the one that quotes the Pesukim in the Chumash.
So you can't be a doctor in Israel?
I didn't say you can't be a doctor. The Ramban would say you cannot have a medical school in the land of Israel that uses cadavers. Okay. That's nivel ha'mes. So we don't know, again, I don't know what nivel ha'mes means. What do you have to do to violate nivel ha'mes? We talked about this a little bit. You will not be tested on it because I couldn't find any discussion. But to do anything which desecrates the body, use your imagination. Certainly cutting open the body is considered nivel ha'mes. Everyone could assume that. Doing something not nice to the body is nivel ha'mes. Hanah min ha'mes. Can you, not allowed to derive benefit from a dead body? So it also seems to be an issur d'oraisa, although it's likely related to the issur nivel ha'mes, and therefore if it applies to Jews, only if nivel ha'mes applies to Jews, so hanah min ha'mes applies to Jews. If it applies to Yehudim at all, it will be the Rabbanan again, and therefore, Rav Moshe finds in himself Zalman Arbach, who said it by nivel ha'mes, would say it by hanah min ha'mes also, that very positive reason for a tzorah is going to be permissible.
Wait, we already said it though.
That was for nivel ha'mes, is for hanah min ha'mes. It's a prohibition to desecrate and a prohibition to derive benefit. We said it for nivel ha'mes, I'm saying it now for hanah min ha'mes.
It's the same thing.
It should be the same thing. So now all the achronim that we're talking about are trying to do it from Jews. Is it permissible to do from Jews? Okay? So maybe obtaining knowledge is different. Maybe obtaining knowledge is not a prohibited benefit. We said kol ma'ar ha'reach ein b'hem yishum mi'ila. Right? Mi'ila is using something that belongs to Hekdesh, that belongs to the temple, that you not allowed to derive any benefit from that which belongs to the temple. However, kol, sound, mar, vision, sight, and reach, the smell, there is no prohibition of me'ila. So maybe there's no prohibition of me'ila, so maybe there's no prohibition of gzela, there's no prohibition of hana, right? That which the Beis HaMikdash owns, I'm not allowed to derive benefit from. So maybe sight, vision, watching something, is not a prohibition. It's not called a benefit. So, Dr. Avram calls it Shlomo Zalman, who says no. He says that only applies to that which was done beheder, meaning in the Beis HaMikdash when they did Simchas Beis HaShoeva or Sukkot, they lit all these torches, and so let's say you had light in your backyard from the torches that they lit in the Beis HaMikdash, you're not in any violation because they lit the torches beheder, right? They did that on purpose. They did that in a permissible way. When you do it in an impermissible way, when you're doing nivel ha'mes, so then watching it will even be an Iser Hanah as well.
Who says that?
This is Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach. So now we had two different proofs whether knowledge is hana or knowledge is not hana. The Maharam Shik says that if I am mudar hana mechavero, if I say I will not derive any benefit from you at all, I take such a nether, a shvua, a swear, an oath, then I cannot use the city library. Because you have a, right, the city library belongs to all the people in the city, and I'm using those books in the library, they partially belong to you, I'm not allowed to derive benefit from that, and he points out, and you using books is just gaining knowledge, and that is prohibited. The Shun Or HaMeir, however, points out that that if I am Muder Hana from a Maya, if I say I will not derive any benefit from this well, I can still Tovel in that well. Right? I can Tovel for purity reasons, like I will drink from the well. I said I'm Muder Hana from the well. So then, from the Maya, not a well, a spring. And the well is probably not okay. It depends. So in Mudar Hana from the Mayan, so can you be Tovel in that Mayan? So he says yes, because that's not a derived form of Hana. That, the fact that you're Tovel after, that's not a type of Hana. So he wants to say no, it's not a tangible form of Hana, so therefore it doesn't qualify. So you see the proofs either way.
So what are we talking about? You are allowed to derive Hana from a Jew's body?
We assume not, almost always.
Based on what? We just have these proofs that count.
Well, the Maharam Sheikh said no, using the Sfarim is knowledge. Is knowledge and vision. And so practically, this doesn't happen. And Rav Shlomo Zalman said the whole thing doesn't apply when it's done be'isser. That's even when it's done be'heter, right? When you light the question is, this is when it's done be'isser, right? When you violate it, you happen to be violating nivel ha'mes, if it's the work. So he says, then it doesn't apply at all. So he said, well, we're also still talking about Jews. What about an abnormal benefit? Shalom kederach hana. When you derive a prohibited benefit from a Torah, it's only according to the normal way which you derive a benefit. When it is in an abnormal way, so then it is less of an issue. It's only us and drabanim. So it would be it's still prohibited, but it would be permissible for it. Cholo would be permissible for it. Tzar kol. The Radvaz says, yep, shalom kederach hana applies to hana and amase as well. When you do it in an abnormal way, there is no prohibition in the Torah. We talked about this. He's talking about using mummies for some type of medicinal therapy, and he wants to eat parts of something going on there. So you're not actually eating the flesh, you're eating something else, the whole discussion. And he says, shalom kederach hana applies to mason as well.
But he says you are
letting it. Yeah, he says you are because it's shalom kederach. That's not the normal way of benefiting from a dead person. You don't eat that. Right. So Rabbi Yehuda Inger says you're wrong. Rabbi Yehuda Inger says no. Shalom kederach only applies when the pasuk says achila. When the Torah says do not eat something, then if you eat it in an abnormal way, it's not an issur d'oraisa. When the Torah does not say do not eat it, but it says it is prohibited, even shalom kederach is prohibited. Right. So basar b'chalav and kilei akerem. Right, Basar B'chalav, the Torah says, the Torah does not say, do not eat milk and meat together. It says, do not cook a calf and its mother's milk, and we learn that you can't eat together. Because the Torah did not say, do not eat it, therefore, even if you eat it in an abnormal way, you're still chayav, kilei akerem, certain types of ways of grafting in vineyard is prohibited, but the Torah doesn't say, do not eat it. It says, do not derive, it says, pentukat hashem le'a. It doesn't use the lashon achila, and therefore, shalom kederach is also prohibited. He says that should also apply to any prohibition that doesn't mention eating. The Torah does not say do not eat from a dead body. It says do not derive benefit from a dead body, and therefore shalom kederach is also forbidden.
So wait, who said perhaps that it may be okay to...
The Radvaz.
The Radvaz.
Radvaz was the Rebbe of the Sheikh of the Betzes in Egypt. He was the Rebbe of the Rizkata, of the Balas of Anar. Alright, so in this context we discussed the mitzvah of Pikuach Nefesh, because, yes?
Just to clarify for a moment, so we're saying that the final position is that by Jews as well, it's usher to get enough, even if it's shalom.
Even shalom kederach.
But by non-Jews, it's still permissible, assuming it's purpose.
As long as it has a purpose, it's not for no reason. We talked that historically, the question of autopsies, dissections, were discussed in the context of Pikuach Nefesh, when Nojibi Huda was asked, someone had some surgery and it went bad, and the person died. So can we do a dissection, an autopsy on it to find out, well, maybe we'll know better about the surgery, how to know it next time. And Nodavi Huda and the Chasam Sofer both talk about this. They say autopsies are prohibited. They were the first people to say autopsies are prohibited. And what about Pikuach Nefesh? Right? It's not one of the three cardinal sins. Not Shikuf HaSdam, Gilei Ra'as, or Avodah Zarah. So why is not? He says, well, you need a Chol Lefaneinu. You have to have a Chol Lefaneinu. This is an important phrase, and you know it. The Chasam Sofer said it. Chol Lefaneinu, a sick person in front of us. He says, otherwise you can do whatever you want on Shabbos and say maybe somebody will be sick. So I'm preparing for the person to be sick. He says, you have to have a sick person in front of us. No one is sick right now, even though it seems like it's a common disease.
What?
To violate an Issur D'oraisa, you have to have it for the sake of people. This person's dead, right? Yeah. Meaning the we're violating it to save someone else who doesn't even exist yet. We don't even know where he is.
You said the Chasam Sofer, isn't that the
Nodavi Huda? The Chasam Sofer says the phrase, Chol Lefaneinu. He's asked the same question. He refers to Nodavi Huda. They both say the same argument. The Chasam Sofer uses the phrase.
They would agree that if you had a case where like people that were in the same room started dying, one by one.
I don't think you have to have the same room. I think he meant the same area.
Killed him is going to kill this guy.
Maybe. Right. Yeah. Right. If we know that, then it's fine. He says, but we don't even know who's sick with this disease. This is just to learn for the future. You can't buy a list of the rights just to learn stuff.
And that's again for Jews. Because by not being room, we're not concerned.
Yeah, it's only Jews.
So by Jews, this Lefaneinu idea doesn't necessarily apply.
Chol Lefaneinu, he says, is the klal gadol of Pikuach Nefesh. You can violate an issur d'oraisa for Pikuach Nefesh only when there's a Chol Lefaneinu.
I'm saying we're allowed to perform an autopsy on a non-Jew.
Autopsy, yes. Autopsy, yes. I said the rest of this year we're only talking about Jews. So Rabbi Blyth uses this framework to discuss the parameters of Pikuach Nefesh. When can you violate an issur d'oraisa for the sake of Pikuach Nefesh? So each of these, I have four, not five. Yeah, I have four. So, when can you violate an issur d'oraisa for Pikuach Nefesh? So they don't necessarily disagree with each other, they're just building off each other, maybe they would agree. The Nodavi Huda and Chasam Sofer say you have to have a chola lefaneinu. You have to have another sick person that I'm violating on his behalf who's here. This next category is a sakana bifaneinu, a danger that is in front of us. So the Tiferes Yisrael and Rizal Salanter allowed eating on Yom Kippur when there was smallpox in the city. Right? The sakana was there. we're not sick yet. And even if you're not sick, you can eat on Yom Kippur so that you don't get sick. Why? Because the plague is already here. The sakana is here. The people who are sick certainly can eat. People who aren't sick, they can eat because the sakana is already there. The next category is the sibas ha-sakana lefanenu, the reason for the danger is in front of us. Rav Unterman said, therefore, can you carry a field hospital to the war on Shabbos? Right? Who told you to go to war on Shabbos? Going to war on Shabbos, can you carry the field hospital to the war? The reason for the danger is here. The danger is not here yet. Nobody's even injured. In the smallpox, the disease, the plague is right here. Here, no one's hurt yet. Can I carry the field hospital? He said, yes, because the sibas ha-sakana lefanenu. And the last question is the statistical sibas ha-sakana lefanenu, which is really a modern question. Statistically, I know. Hatzalah gets called 5 times every Shabbos, right? We were called 3 times. Can I drive back? What's the point of driving back on Shabbos? Can you drive back? We'll talk about driving back separately another time. But can I drive back? We usually say, well, you can drive back because you might be called again. Why? Because we know you get called 5 times every Shabbos, so you can certainly drive back
to the base.
Back to the base. We'll talk about driving back. Don't use that as an example. We'll talk about driving back separately a little bit later.
What was the Hebrew terminology for this one?
I called it a statistical. Sibas ha-sakana lefanenu statistic.
Is it just statistical sakana or even statistical sibas ha-sakana?
Can you explain the smallpox one again? The plague is prevalent in the city. We're all healthy. It's outside, but we can eat because we want to prevent the disease. The danger isn't here. No one's sick, but the reason for the danger is present.
What's the difference between that one and the danger being in front of us, like the field hospital?
Field hospital is no one's even sick yet. No one's sick at all. The war hasn't started. Right? We're about to go, we're going to war, so can you carry that? The next thing we talk about is organ transplants. We'll do this a little bit quickly. Can you do cadaveric organ transplants from a dead person into a living person? So it's nibble amaze, it's a nomina amaze. Let's say it's from a Jew. Is that permissible or not? Absolutely. It's bikuach nefesh, you're saving a life, so it's okay, right? If it's to save a life. Is it shaloka there? If it's not shaloka there, I don't really care. If you're saving a life, you're saving a life, you're saving a life, you're saving a life. There is, pikuach nefesh means to save a life of someone who's dying right now. It means to save a life of someone who is a kidney patient who will die in 5 years. If I give him a kidney from a dead patient, he will live for 15 years. That is also considered pikuach nefesh. So we talked about pikuach nefesh a little bit. So almost everyone assumes that this is obvious. This is what we do. The Minchas Yitzchak says, how can it be? How can it be that someone would say, you know, if it's a mitzvah, so then even the Gadol Hador dies, you'd have to take out his organs to save someone else, and no one would ever think to do that, and if you don't do it to him, you shouldn't do it to everybody else. And you turn back to him and say, no, you should take it from everybody, I don't see what the difference is. But he assumed you wouldn't do it, that's his mahalach.
Who's this?
The Minchas Yitzchak. Since Eliezer says, if someone comes to ask, should I do this? He says, you should tell them no. Because there's a mitzvah kvura, and you should do it. You should bury someone whole. And who knows what these organs are going to do in the next person. It's not so good. I'll be Kabbalah. It's not the best idea. And we shouldn't really do this. But practically, well, what if someone's dead? Do I have the obligation to take the organs? Maybe I should. He's saying, if you ask, should I do it? Sister Lazarus will tell you no. You shouldn't do it. You should want to be buried whole. You should want to, who knows what terrible things that person's going to do with your cornea and all the
avarice is going to do.
If I'm dying, or maybe I'm asking right now. I'm a healthy person. I'm asking you right now. What should I do? Should I donate my corneas? He says, who knows what they're going to do? Who knows what your kidney's going to do to the next person? You shouldn't do it. But if I have a dead person in front of me, maybe I still should do it. Rav Shlomo Zalman assumed, of course you do it. It's pikuach nefesh. And as Rabbi Blythe posed to me, of course you don't need consent. I mean consent. Pikuach nefesh. The guy's dead. I'm not doing anything. He's dead. So, you won't bury him? So you won't bury him. It's pikuach nefesh. It's hanam and amaze. It's pikuach nefesh. It's nibble amaze. It's pikuach nefesh. What do you, I don't understand the problem. Rav Moshe Feinstein says, yes, you should do it. You could do it, but you need permission from the family. Because the family is the one in charge of his kvura. Let's not get into it right now. We're just going to do it really quickly. The family is the one who's obligated to bury him. And therefore, it's their responsibility to do it. Therefore, they have rights over his body, and therefore you need their consent to do it. I think we're actually not going to cover, going to go over the Tumas Kohanim stuff very much, because that was the last thing we did. So I'm going to slow down a little bit, go through this more normally. And Tumas Kohanim, you can still hear the other shiur, and all feels okay. So famously, we now talk about the Shut Binyan Sion. Binyan Sion from Yaakov Ettinger. He says, so the Gemara in Bava Kamma wants to know, can you steal to save a life? Right? And most Rishonim assume, like, well, do you even have to pay? Do I have to pay you back? If I'm going to save a life, if I steal from you to save someone else's life, do I have to pay you back? We're going to say, no, I'm obligated to pikuach nefesh, you're obligated to pikuach nefesh. You weren't there, I used your money, your property to save his life, but you're obligated to it, I don't have to pay him back. And the Gemara said, you have to pay him back. You're not allowed to steal to save a life, which Tosfos assumes means you have to pay him back. Rashi seems to think that there's a prohibition. Benizion seems to think there's a prohibition too. And he says that, it's really prohibited. You're not allowed to steal to save a life. So...
Wait, is it prohibited?
The Binyan Sion assumes that it's prohibited. Tosfos assumes that you have to pay him back. That's the Gemara's question, do you have to pay him back or not? And when the Gemara says it's prohibited, it means you have to pay him back.
If the Binyan Sion was dying and his friend was there and said, I could save you, but I need to use his equipment to patch up, you'd say, no, let me die.
Maybe.
So the Gemara says prohibited, and agrees with Gemara.
No, the Gemara says no. The Gemara says you're not allowed to do this. The Gemara says you can't do this. What does it mean? It means I can't steal from you to save a life and not pay you back? Or it means I'm not allowed to do it, period, even if I do pay you back?
Oh, so it's, you don't know
what it's my focus what the Gemara is talking about. Tosfos says it's, do I have to pay you back? And the Gemara says you shouldn't do this. It means you can't do it without paying back. And the Binyan Sion wants to think from Rashi that it's actually prohibited.
Tosfos says you just pay.
Yeah. So you went through various proofs. How could this be true? So it's not one of the big three, so how can it be true? So we know if you go off Nefesh, it's Dofa Avoda. Avoda is Dofa Shabbos, but Avoda is not Dofa Zeh. So if you go off Nefesh, we can violate the Avoda of the Beis HaMikdash, right? The Avoda of the Beis HaMikdash, you can stop doing work in the Beis HaMikdash to save a life. If a Kohen's bringing a Korban, he can save a life. He has to save a life and stop doing what he's doing. And we know that the Avoda is Dofa Shabbos. You can do the Avoda of the Beis HaMikdash on Shabbos, right? So that's how we know that the Kohen's Nefesh is Dofa Shabbos. Because Nefesh is Dofa Avoda, and Avoda is Dofa Shabbos. So if A pushes off B and B pushes off C, A pushes off C. He says, but avoda is not dofik zela, you're not allowed to bring a carbon from something that's stolen, you can't do the avoda with something that's stolen, and therefore, maybe pikuach nefesh is also not dofik zela, you have no proof that pikuach nefesh is dofik zela.
That's the binyan sion.
Yeah. That's one of his proofs. He has another discussion by David HaMelech and Lechem Aponim. David HaMelech needs to eat and for his men, and he's talking in the city of Nov, and he wants the Lechem Aponim. And he wants to, you know, Lechem Aponim, the showbread that's in the Mishkan that was there. And the Kohen tells him, you know, you're lucky because today we took it off the Mishkan. We took it off. And today we switched it. So it's no longer Hekdesh. Because had it been Hekdesh, the Benin Sion says, what's the problem? It would have been Me'ilah. And Me'ilah's Gazela, and you're not allowed to eat it. Even though you're all dying and you need food, I couldn't give it to you. You know, you're lucky we switched it today so that you can have this stuff that's no longer Hekdesh.
What is the source?
This is David HaMelech by Lechem Aponim. It's a story in Lechem.
What do they do with the Lechem Aponim when they switch
it off? Kohen eat it. Once it becomes a Kohanim's permission, they can give it to everyone. But it's no longer Me'ilah. It's Yotze Midin Me'ilah. We talked the last, one of the last parts we talked about was one of the miracles that happened to Beis HaMikdash was a pregnant woman never miscarried from the smelling the meat, right? You would assume that when a woman smells meat, so then she needs to eat. The Gemara assumes on Yom Kippur that she doesn't eat, her and the baby are in Sarkana, and so therefore she can eat on Yom Kippur. So we say there's a nace that the woman never smelled the Basar HaKodesh and miscarried from that. So Rashi points out, because, what if she would have smelled it and wanted to eat it? So he wouldn't have given it to her. He would not have given her that meat. So Binyan Sion says, why? So Tosfos Chadash says, I don't understand that. Rashi is ridiculous. Why wouldn't you give him the Basar HaKodesh? Of course he would. Go to Nefesh. So Binyan Sion says, well, because if it's Me'ilah, if it's on the Mizbeach or something like that, if the korban is still Me'ilah, so it's Gzela to take it, and you can't even give it to her to save a life. So you see from that Rashi that you can't steal it to save a life. Okay?
Whose life is at risk?
In that case, it's either the mother or the fetus or both. Don't worry about that. Even if it's the fetus, we know halacha l'maaseh we save the fetus, but we'll talk about that a bit later. Let's skip this one. So we said... So they asked a question on him, right? The Gemara in Erechin says that if a woman dies in childbirth, she's dead, you can bring a knife through the Rishus HaRabim, the violate Shabbos, to go try to take out the baby. She says, I have to nibble a mace. It's nibble a mace to save the baby. How can you nibble a mace to save the baby? So this Maharam Shik asked him. But so he says that that's different because she's the one causing the Pikuach Nefesh. When she's the one causing the Pikuach Nefesh, so then it's a different story.
The woman who's dead
is the one who's causing the Pikuach Nefesh. So it's different.
Wait, she's the one saving life, or she's the one who's causing the...
She's causing the death. Right? There's one more. Okay. So he says it's the same thing with an autopsy. When you're doing an autopsy, when you're using someone else's body parts, you're stealing from them. And he says, even according to Tosfos, he says, so according to Rashi, it's prohibited. And he says, according to Tosfos, what's the Gemara talking about? Can I steal and not pay back to save a life? And the Gemara says, no, you're not allowed to steal and not pay back. You have to pay back. He says, but when I steal, when I take someone's organs who's dead, I can't pay for them because he's dead. He can never accept payment. And if he can never accept payment, I can never pay him back. And therefore, according to Tosfos, it's prohibited to benefit at all from a cadaver. Anything you get from him, even an organ transplant, even for Pigoach Nefesh, is going to be prohibited because you cannot steal to save a life unless you have the theoretical capability of paying him back. So let's just talk quickly. At the end, we talk about what about if it's not Pigoach Nefesh, right? What if it's to you doing a hand transplant or cornea transplant, the blind person is not going to be in life danger, let's assume. So, can you violate Nivla Mesa? So we quoted the shach, the famous shach by Sakhanas Eiver, that you can violate a negative prohibition for the sake of limb, just not Shabbos. Do we pass like the shach, or a life thought yes, or a shechter thought not? Also, Reb Chaim Nav, this you need to know, but we'll talk about it later. What is danger to a limb? Reb Chaim Nav thought, it's not that you're going to necessarily lose your limb. Even if you lose the functionality of that limb, it's still considered Sakhanas Eiver, and therefore you can violate a lav, just not Shabbos. Rav Eliashiv thought that that's not true. He said that Rav Underman said, well, what about Yisra Anov? So Rav Underman says, well, when you reconnect the limb to a living person, so blood starts flowing through it anymore, it's not considered dead anymore. It's not considered dead anymore, it's not Tomei anymore, he says that's A. And B, right, except for this Greece that Rav Thomas Kahnet, it's not dead anymore. So if it's not Tomei, there's no Yisra Anov anymore. Once it's alive, there's no Yisra Anov. Rav Shlomo Zalman disagreed with that a little bit. He said, well, that's true once you do it, but who says that you're allowed to do it in the first place? If it didn't, if in the process it wasn't okay, once you did it, he doesn't think it works. Right? If you had to violate a prohibition in the process, he doesn't think it works.
Rav Shlomo Zalman?
Yeah. Rav Eliashiv says, he says, it doesn't become alive, but it's attached to somebody who's alive. Right? It's a dead organ attached to your body. So you have to bury it. There's a mitzvah say to bury it, and there's a prohibition of hanav. So if it's pigoach nefesh, so it's pigoach nefesh. So you walk around every single day, there's a mitzvah say on you to bury that extra kidney that's in your body, and you say yes, and there's an iser hanav to benefit from that kidney, and you say yes, there is an iser hanav, and I'm violating an iser hanav to save my own life, it's permissible. So he says, but if it's not to save your own life, it is not okay. Okay, so let's stop here. We're not going to talk about Thomas Kohanim. There are questions of Thomas Kohanim. On the midterm, there are three questions of Thomas Kohanim, I'll tell you that. So if you know everything else that we said today, and all those shiurim, you should be fine. If you know anything about Thomas Kohanim, you can answer those three questions. I apologize for not reviewing it. These shiurim are on the web. This will be on the web. I'll try to put it up now, I think, so that if anyone wants to listen to it again. And you can email me with questions if you'd like. I'll try to get back to you as soon as I can. And don't worry too much. You'll all do fine.
Have a good day.
You too.